Broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Learning Insight, featuring learning professionals improving performance to drive business results.
Welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Learning Insights. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. How are things going in your world?
Pretty well, I think. Today's going to be fun. We're going to have a great show in front of us, and a little bit later this afternoon, we're going to go hang out with the startup folks, right?
That's right. Startup Atlanta at the Metro Chamber is having, I think, a board meeting, and we're invited because we're going to be doing some work with those folks.
So the only gap left then is lunch. Have you got that figured out yet?
Somehow between now and then, we'll have to have lunch.
No, this is going to be a very exciting segment with Learning Insights. We have.
Good morning. Good morning, Lee.
Hey.
So are you finally caught up from the loss of sleep doing the Dallas show?
No, I haven't. I went straight from there to Orlando and then Miami and then back to Orlando and then back up here.
So. Wow, on Training Pros Business or just some of your other ventures?
A little bit of both.
So how was the show for Training Pros? Did you guys get a chance to catch up with Exance and get a chance to meet some new folks and go to sessions? I mean, was it a productive for you? Was it a good investment?
Yeah, it really was. I mean, you described it perfectly. We had a great opportunity to get some great radio interviews, hear from some great learning leaders, catch up with a lot of our clients, and go to see some of the presentations, and just a great show. Got around to see some of the vendors.
Right.
And learned a lot. I learned a lot about, learned a good session on mobile learning.
So what's the latest on mobile learning? It's not a fad. It's
not a fad. And, you know, this was a lot about mobile learning design, designing for different platforms. You can't design one thing that will apply to all platforms. It was pretty interesting.
All right, but this is going to be even more interesting.
Right.
We have two great guests from Crawford Company. We have with us Bruce Stauff and Richard Charles. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Stone.
So let's start with you, Bruce. Give us a little bit of an overview, mission, purpose. What is Crawford out there doing for folks, and who exactly are you doing it for?
Well, Crawford Company has been around over 75 years.
You don't look that old.
Well, I've got a few years in with the company, let me tell you. So. Not that far out from retirement. But Crawford & Company is the largest independent risk management company in the world. We are a global company in over 65 different countries. We're based here in Atlanta. And you know, we handle claims for insurance carriers as well as self-insureds. We have other units within the company, like our Garden City Group, that handle the class action distributions and things like that for the federal court system. We do a lot of catastrophe work after the major storms like just happened up in the Northeast. We have adjusters who go out and help the insurance companies fill in their staff.
But you're part of, within Crawford, a group, the educational service?
We are Crawford Educational Services, and we're a small group, but we handle our unit handles our domestic employees. So we've got about 5,000 here in the United States that our team handles training for.
I bet a lot has changed and evolved in the time that you've been there in the learning space at Crawford, hasn't it?
Yeah, I've been associated with it for a little over 20 years within the training unit. I had been out in the field working prior to that, but I have to tell you, I've seen a lot of changes. You know, it's transitioned from the traditional stand-up trainer, 4 or 5 weeks of training, and now we've moved so much more into the virtual world.
So this movement to the virtual world, was that something that you guys decided you wanted to do and see if it would fit, or was there some business case that drove you, that compelled you, that said, look, we have to do this?
Yeah, actually, it started all the way back in the mid-90s, and even before we got involved with the Internet, really, it's been an evolutionary process. It started with CD technology, and we kind of were ahead of the game from a company standpoint because most of the employees didn't have a computer at their desk back right, in 1994, sure. 95. And as we sent CDs out, we either had to send a laptop, literally send a laptop, early vintage laptop with it, or they had to take it home and do it on their home computer. So we kind of had the cart ahead of the horse. But now, of course, we moved into the Internet along with that. It's all evolved, you know, over a period of time, gotten away. We don't send CDs out anymore. So.
So, Richard, what was your ticket in? You actually had a computer, so they said, come on board? Or?
Yes. Actually, I was a field adjuster, a general adjuster, as it's termed, working larger property claims in the state of Georgia or anywhere some of our clients had physical property. And an opportunity came along that I just threw my hat in the ring for, and it just worked out. And, no, I had almost no computer training at that point. In fact, that was around 1995, and DOS was popular. if you've heard of the floppy disk, believe me, I was there when it was used, and it was 5.5 inches of actual floppiness. But we started there and just began training and evolved just as things were needed. And as more electronics came into the industry with the software and the use of computers, we found the content of our classes beginning to change, too. In the beginning, when electronics first was being introduced, it was training, you know, the people that were in the field at the time about that and having them learn to do that. That's transitioning the skills that they used from one format to another, which is not necessarily an easy thing. You know, we kind of resist change at times. Since then, with the younger folks coming through now and growing up with this kind of technology, it's just not the same kind of training. I don't have to provide upfront in a classroom type training to them because they're so intuitive. Now, my training on this sort of format and the electronic format is one of just offering them problems to apply to the technology and simply helping them as they become stuck along the way, usually individually.
Now, can you share maybe some tips for that person that's going from standing up in front of a room to now teaching virtually? Do you have any some do's or don'ts, some common mistakes that some of the facilitators make? On, you know, like they think that maybe they can translate their stand-up training to the same exact thing, but obviously it's different skills,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely different skills. You find yourself simply rolling forward with the times. But with training, one of the most important things that you can do is develop the ability to listen and look for feedback when you're talking to any sort of a group. So at this point, you know, I had to learn that too. And when I found that, you know, I found myself talking in front of the group and the group not being with me. Now, that is a lonely experience when you're standing in front.
Well, how do you know the group's not with you if they're not actually with you physically?
We have a camera.
Absolutely.
They're on camera.
Uh-huh.
It's nice. A small group. You can see your students there. You know, the trainees, it's usually no more than 6 or 7 people. Mm-hmm. And so there is a certain amount of interaction. They can see each other. They can see the trainer. We did not want to lose that, at least that part of the personal contact, because one of the things we feared was if we went with audio only, one, the trainer has no idea what their people
they
are doing.
They could have left the room, right? Right.
They could have left the room or fallen asleep.
Kind of like right now, right? We don't know.
Well, let me just comment along with what Rick said. There are different skill sets, but in the design that we have in our virtual class, we realized early on when we went to this, we could not do a traditional stand-up type death by, you know, slides, overheads, and that type of thing. That so often you go to a class and somebody puts a slide up and they lecture for hour after hour after hour, and the only thing you can think about is the next cup of coffee, and it's not like that. It's not an 8-hour program, and part of the work they do, part of the technical training that they get is through our LMS. The instructor gives them an assignment to go off or out on the LMS and take a module or two from a course, and then they come back to the class the next day, and it's a 4-hour, it's usually a 4-hour time block, not 8 hours. And the instructor then works with them with that technical material, doesn't try to reteach it to them, but makes them apply it. So instead of lecture, we've replaced lecture with practical application. I mean, you can sit there and lecture to people and test their rote memory with tests. It doesn't mean they really got it or they can apply it. But when they have to actually physically apply the information and you can work through that, it also raises a lot of questions and shows you where the gaps in their knowledge may be. And the instructor can address that, take their time to address that, rather than wasting time standing there, you know, just lecturing hour after hour and, you know, at blank stares. So.
Well, one of the things that you find when you begin the virtual training is, how do you confirm that what you're providing to them has been received? Did they get it? And so how do you answer that question? Well, we decided, and we had to replace the standard type of testing, right, multiple choice or anything else, with a form of involvement. So we do provide, you know, pre-study for them to take. I provide exercise questions for them to complete before the virtual class begins and return to me so that I know that they've done the work regarding their pre-studies. And then we have a format of questions in which they have to apply during the online session. And it's by their own involvement, by their ability to talk about and answer the oral part is that confirms that we know what they did.
So then you
can judge by that.
So you present some information, then individually these six or seven people are doing some sort of an application of the information.
It's all discussion.
And then so are they peer-to-peer helping each other as well? Like if somebody's having a problem, can they help each other?
Absolutely.
Or you can intervene as the instructor? It's very collaborative.
It's an open discussion based on scenarios that I provide to them during the online session. So I'll present a situation in which they have to talk around. So it's open enough for all of them to have additions to, so they can all have a say in there and help each other out.
One other thing that's an advantage for the individual is it gives them an opportunity, if they have a similar situation in an existing case that they may have open, they can, they're having a little difficulty with, they can raise that with the group and kind of kick some ideas around on what's the best way to handle it. But that in itself becomes a learning experience.
Right. It becomes a conversation starter for something that they can relate to their day-to-day activities.
Well, one of the hardest things, you know, about academic training in a classroom is how do you put that into play? In
right.
other words, how do you transition it into on-the-job knowledge? That you, the jobs these folks are training for is very interactive. They make a lot of decisions in a day. And these decisions have to be made, you know, without notes, on the spot, and who knows, you know, where a question is coming from or about what. So they have to be prepared when they hit the ground after the academic training is over. So a format like this, given situations that they have to respond to orally in the online session, is very helpful to them.
Right. They get these repetitions in the safe environment so that when the live bullets are flying, they're more equipped to handle that.
Make your mistakes online.
Right, exactly.
So while this is happening, are there several people in one room interacting electronically, or am I at my cubicle or at my home office and another student is at their place, or could you do either one, I guess, right?
Yeah, you could do either one. I think most of the classes that we're running, the individuals are scattered all over the United States, and they're calling in. We have a lot of employees that do work from home, and we have other ones that are in larger offices, depending on which business unit they're in to some degree, but they can call in from their cube. We do recommend that in the larger locations where they're, you have a lot of employees, that could be a little distracting if they're in their own cube because their phone constantly rings and all that. So we recommend that in that branch they set up a special cube where employees that are involved in a training class can go and kind of get
away from it. It's more quiet, right?
Exactly, right. Exactly. And less distractions during that four-hour block.
So is this a trend, David, that you're seeing with your clients and people that are in associations that you guys are part of? Are you seeing more and more companies migrate more toward the virtual classroom? Are you seeing more of this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's the cost savings there that you can't deny. And if it's done well like these guys do it, then it's interactive. You know, it can be interactive just like the classroom can. What I find kind of interesting in the story of these guys is, with Crawford Educational Services, is you know, it's easy to – you can say, okay, here's this existing technology and here's the ROI for it. We can argue that, you know, it's going to save us money and everything. But most people aren't really pitching for stuff that's already existing. Like these guys, you're pitching for stuff that – you know, you were kind of ahead of your time. Like you said, everybody didn't even have a computer yet when you started this. And this is the same thing that people are facing right now, right? I want to get mobile learning go up and going. Well, everybody doesn't have a platform for that yet. Everybody doesn't have a you know, an iPod or whatever.
Right.
Or iPad or whatever. So I think it's kind of interesting. How do you pitch that? You know, what kind of challenges do you guys find when you're trying to pitch technology that wasn't even hardly being used yet? How do you prove ROI for that?
Well... part of the driving factor for us, well, we had a couple of different driving factors. One, of course, was budgetary. You know, the cost savings is tremendous. That's our probably, other than, you know, if you have a large staff, your compensation side, the cost expense for travel is our biggest ticket item. And I should point out, we still offer a few regular traditional classes. And I also want to comment real quick on David's comment. When we first started the virtual classes, we had a couple of clients out there because we train other people too, not just our own employees.
And, oh, really? I want to talk more about that in a little bit.
Well, but it was interesting because a couple of them said, well, okay, we'll try that. We still were offering the virtual classes and side by side with the traditional classes. And I thought it was very interesting because that was about 3 years, 4 years ago. And what we've seen is a steady increase. And now we've seen that several more clients are saying, hey, this is great. It's a cost savings, as well as they've had a chance to see the results of the training.
Were they skeptical that the results wouldn't be, you know, equivalent?
Yeah, you have a lot of people out there and that are in management positions that like myself, came up through the old school where you sat in a class all day and that was how they got their training. It was good training, but you know, this was something new and you've maybe got a little bit of the older generation making those decisions on how that money is spent, but they also saw the savings too, and we've had such great feedback from our external clients, the non-Crawford people, that, what can I say? They loved it. And now they're, you know, we're getting a lot of repeat business with that.
So I want to hear more about this external client thing. You actually market to completely different companies doing completely different stuff.
It's open to anybody. We don't restrict it. Anybody can could be a private individual on the street, or can be an insurance carrier or an independent. Our classes and courses are open. We have a website. They can go out there and they can see the schedule and whether it's a traditional class or it's a virtual class, and they can enroll right online, pay with a credit card. We try to make it as easy as we can for someone to get to the training.
Well, you had to do something to defray Richard's salary. I understand that. You're looking for some way to bring in some cash.
And I'm afraid after all the celebrity status today, it's going to cost me more and more.
What about instructional design? Are there some different considerations? You got to go with a little different design and treatment on some of this stuff, don't you? Smaller chunks or something.
Well, keep in mind, when we push a lot of our basic technical material out to our LMS, it's in a course format, smaller chunks, and people can take it in little bites.
Okay.
It's broken down into modules and specifics. The nice thing there is the instructor can assign those little pieces out. They don't even have to complete a full course. It could just be a module out of a course for the next day's activity. So we were able to get it down into those smaller bites for the people to apply the knowledge on a day-to-day basis. And the big payback has been that, like I said, one is the budgetary. I also want to mention one other thing. We're finding that more and more people don't want to get on a plane and fly across country to a class for a variety of reasons. And one of the things that we found, especially with single parents, we were having a lot of problems getting people. I mean, what do you do with your kids, especially if you got young kids?
Right, it's very disruptive.
It is, and we were actually having to run special classes clear out on the West Coast and other parts of the country for groups of single parents that, understandably, there was just nothing they could do with their kids. And so when we started doing the virtual classes, that was huge because we were able to reach that audience, and they love it because they can go home at night. It doesn't disrupt their normal activity. And now what we're finding is even where you have dual-parent households, so many of the moms and dads are involved in, you know, sports and other stuff with the kids.
Yeah.
And it was the pushback we're getting now on traditional is, well, you know, I coach a baseball team for my kid, and I can't really be coming there for a week or two, you know. And so now we're getting that, and it's been great for them too.
Right. It increases their productivity and their quality of life, you know, just by able to seamlessly fit this into their life instead of, you know, them having to travel across the country for a few days.
And the managers like it because we're not really taking people offline for, say, a week or two. They're actually able to stay in the office. So part of their time, when they're not with the instructor, they can spend working on more critical cases that need immediate attention or need their attention. And not everything has to be pushed off to another employee while they're out of town for a week or two to class. Because in the past, and, you know, that can degrade the quality, I think, of anybody's handling when all of a sudden if you're an insured or a claimant or somebody out there and you're dealing with an adjuster and you're doing a great job and all of a sudden a different voice is on the phone, oh, well, he's out of town for 2 weeks.
We had to train him.
Well, that's what I want to hear. It's not that, but the individual that's covering it for him has her own full caseload and everything.
Right,
so,
sure.
So, you know, it makes it harder for them to provide the same level sometimes of quality on it. It's a concern. And this way, the individual who hasn't had to leave town can still, you know, have a hand in helping with those particular cases. So it's better for the end customer. Our end customer is the person on the street. You know.
Now, one of the benefits, though, of everybody getting together in a room somewhere is that camaraderie that it builds and the team building and the collaboration and meeting people in different regions maybe and seeing how they're doing something, just kind of those, you know, the informal meeting benefits. Is there a way to incorporate any of this in the virtual training as well?
They do actually see each other and
right.
hear each other during the online sessions. So they do, you know, in some way. You know,
but do you find any, like, together. After the session's over, is there any collaboration that allows them to kind of communicate with this group, this little mini group that you put together?
I bet
for
you
the
can
training?
Bake that in, though, can't you?
You can put that in there, but take the classroom, for example. Once they're back to their own offices, there's still none.
Right.
I mean, they go back to their individual world pretty much, whether it's online or on the classroom.
Right.
So, I mean, there's not any difference there. I think one of the things, you know, about the online training is that, I mean, these folks work. Remember, these are professionals who work as individuals.
Yeah, sure.
Even in their own offices, with the responsibilities they're assigned, they can't work with anyone else. It's a subjective kind of job where they're involved with a certain circumstance of damage that no one else has subjectivity to.
Mm-hmm.
So even if they did have a question, I mean, it's up to them to pretty much research it themselves. If they tried to ask someone else, at best they could get an objective answer, but not a subjective one.
Right.
So, I mean, these folks pretty much work, you know, with their own problems and with their own expertise. So this is why, you know, we want them to be interactive, and I want to see how they're applying the knowledge we've asked them to gain, you know, during the time that they're in the class and we're all together. So now,
do you have metrics to test that to see how the outcomes are? After this kind of training, are they getting, you know, equal or better outcomes?
Yeah, let me address that. We do a follow-up survey with the individuals.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we do is to really test it, we go out to their team managers, which
uh-huh.
is that next line. So it's like a supervisor. And that individual is usually working with the person fairly closely when they come out of training to make sure, you know, that they're applying the knowledge properly in the field. You know, it's after they leave our care. And we follow up to see, you know, are there things that we need to change? Are there things we need to add? What we're looking to do is be able to make the program better, but it also gives us some feedback as far as quality, you know, are the people getting the same level of training?
So let's get some counsel for some other organizations, maybe save them a little bit of heartache. Any mistakes, missteps along the way that, you know, if you had it to do again or if you could save a friend from spending too much money or too much time as they're migrating more and more toward virtual learning, what kind of counsel would you share with a colleague on that front?
Well, one, do a lot of research, and don't be afraid to ask other companies. We're very actively involved in organizations that are training-oriented, I mean, within the industry, like the Society of Insurance Trainers and Educators site, and we have found that when you sit down and you talk to everybody, and we ask the questions, you know, what mistakes did you make?
You ask the same question.
Yeah, we ask the same questions, but one of the things I would really counsel people to do not try to just take, and I've seen companies do this and then they have problems, don't try to take your traditional classroom and a bunch of slides and stick them up on a screen and lecture to people for 8 hours a day online. They're not going
to
get
right,
it.
Right, so you have to adapt it to the technology you're using.
Yes, you do.
Right.
Eight hours of slides has to be greased with a steak dinner and cocktails. And it won't stand on its own.
Now, one of the kind of unintended consequences that you mentioned earlier was this: it improved the quality of life and the engagement of the people that were more receptive because that didn't disrupt their home life. Was there any other kind of unintended benefits of doing virtual over traditional?
You can jingle change in your pocket. It's not as big a deal.
Yeah, primarily, I mean...
Something that you didn't anticipate that you would... You know, you started doing it, and I'm sure you planned for a lot of contingencies, but then maybe you saw something like, wow, I didn't realize that people were benefiting in this manner.
You know, anytime you exercise a new idea, you're always excited to see that it actually does work.
Right.
when you put something new out there, you're always taking, you know, a certain chance.
Sure.
You know, and having come from a very traditional background myself, as well as, you know, most of the older people in the industry today, you're never really sure. But we found that it has been very successful. I think one of the things that, you know, most companies today and insurance industry as a whole, I think, very resistant to change. They know how to do things. Their organization is set up to do it one way. And how do we even think about going about any kind of change to this? Working with the proper subject matter experts and working with perhaps another professional like Dave and the organization that he has, working with things like YouTube even that can be a source for information to bring in, and a certain amount of creativity and discussion, I found that bringing that kind of information to a round table can come up with very good results. People know what they do, and they know what they want. And the question is, I mean, how do we reach that goal, you know, in a new way now? So there's a few things that you do need to learn, because it is a different sort of technology, and it's thinking along the lines of something new. It's presenting the same ideas, but in a brand new way.
Mm-hmm.
So how can that be effective? Working with a professional, I think, in that area is very helpful.
That you think that fast-forwarded the success of this program?
I think that it definitely fast-forwarded ours.
Let me tell you one other aspect. Of course, I tend to be budgetary-oriented, but this is externally, you know, when you have outside experts in the field that you would like to have come into the class, and in the past we've had a number of people that could be, you know, could be a vendor, could be somebody else, attorneys, other folks that have come in and spoken to our classes, that's a big expense to them too. And, you know, one of the things that is a real plus is we could have somebody up in Seattle involved in our class, and they never have to leave their office.
You can have the very best, no matter where they're.
Well, that's the whole point. They don't have your guest speaker doesn't even have to get on a plane. All they got to do is get on their laptop in their office and have a camera so that people can see them, and they can actually present to the group from where they're at. So it cuts their costs. And even internally for some of our executives and other people, if they want to participate in some way in the class, but they're not right there at the home office, they're able to go ahead and get online.
Well, there's your senior level endorsement too. Even a CEO, senior level executive, that you want them to really properly sponsor this training and clearly communicate that they are behind this and this is important. We're talking a few minutes over some technology, not having to spend the whole day or half a day.
They could do it right from the C-suite.
Right, you could get a David Edelman level guy in with this kind of technology.
You can dream.
Yeah, but
you're lucky.
Do we have to use a camera?
So you guys are pretty much all in on virtual. I think you mentioned you still do some traditional stand-up training.
Well, let me make one quick comment on that.
Yeah,
we're not abdicating that virtual training replaces all stand-up or classroom training.
Right.
A lot of our management training is done as traditional classes in Atlanta. It's preferred to get them together for a lot of reasons, including the collaboration question that you raised, you know, and that type of interaction. And, yes, I suppose they go out and have discussions over a beer at night or whatever, you know.
But plus you have that trust exercise where you have to fall backwards. You got to be some of that stuff you can't do. But where I was headed with this is even in that environment, it can still be very powerfully supplemented, I would think, with virtual learning, pre, during, post. Yes?
Yes.
Absolutely. It plays right into even the classroom training. Any portion of it can be provided online
right.
at any moment.
Yeah.
And one of the things that, Lee, you mentioned, you know, what are some of the serendipity sort of benefits that you might find is that the outside people that you do bring in at times, this more than likely, even today, is still new for many of them.
Sure.
So there, it's an introduction for them, but it's also very interesting to see their satisfaction with how it actually works.
Right.
Because they've never done it before.
Right.
You know, there's one other type of training that we do within our department that has had a huge impact, and that is systems training. That kind of got handed us several years ago when you have, especially proprietary systems, and, you know, you've got to roll that out, you know, globally and or just within the United States to 5,000 different people. To do that in a classroom-type setting, and we've done it just about every way you can think of, that is... It's excruciatingly expensive, okay? I mean, you spend $500,000 just trying to roll out a one-time training to or more to if you have to go around and rent classrooms and everything around the country. And
right, just logistics hours, crazy.
And pull people offline
right.
for a day or two or three. We use a program that actually captures the system, and then you actually build training modules around it, lessons, if you will, about around the different screens, the input, like claims information, that type of thing. Here's how you do this. And it's almost like being in a live environment. If you were actually going through the training, you would think you were in the system because it reacts exactly like the live system. But you're not affecting live data.
You're not screwing anything up.
Yeah, you can't screw. Well, you're actually in a training environment, so you can't hurt anything.
Right.
And there's practice files and everything like that. But at the end of the
day, huge.
Well, the beauty is it's all done, again, in small lessons. And if you're 6 months out and all of us out of the training, and you say, oh, I don't remember how we did that. All you have to do is click a link on your computer. It takes you back into the course, which is still there, and it's still a tutorial. You just click that lesson and say, oh, that's how I did
it. It's a refresher system, and it's you build it once, and you can use it over and over again.
Indefinitely. And the beauty is we can update it literally.
And just the module you want to update. You don't have to.
Just the module we want to update. Just the lessons we have to update. Which and it's there even for the person that took the course 2 years ago. If they go back now and look at that lesson, they get the
updated right.
Exactly.
And that's what you want.
And that has been that,
for someone who
huge.
Likes budgets, you must really like that.
Well, I know my boss is.
So, Lee, these guys have been singing your song the entire segment because if it were up to you, you would do this for education, period, amen. Not
right.
Just
I think
corporate
I think it goes
training.
Beyond corporate. I would love to see this kind of stuff in, you know, like the public school system.
Actually, some of the public schools have tried systems like this.
Yeah, but they don't have a Richard yet.
Well, there's been a couple of school systems out there that have done a thing called the flipped classroom, where instead of the students actually coming in to school in high school, they actually do their training at home.
Okay.
And so when they come in to school, it's basically to present the projects that they've completed and to take any sort of testing. But it allows for discussion. So, and this is, you know, various different types of software through Microsoft or many of the other providers out there have. I think teachers, for example, will do a little video of themselves for a topic, send it to the student on their telephone or on any other
right.
device, and they can do this learning, you know, in a home environment and come back into the classroom.
And the teacher could spend more time actually teaching and interacting
exactly
with the people who are having trouble with the,
and
the concept.
This has been very successful. A couple of Colorado schools have tried this.
Now, it seems that in this case, it seems that the corporations and business are really leading the charge in education. And it would be good to see, you know, the kids kind of follow along the path that the corporations are kind of leading.
As I said, I mean, it's very difficult to create a change, you know, in an industry, especially when you have momentum and folks that have been doing the same thing, you know, for a long time. I've always felt that Crawford has been a true innovator, and I'm not just saying that because I work for them, but we have gone into areas and tried things and have been successful with things. I think, you know, more than a lot of other companies have. And we now have just a bed of resources that insurers, since this is our industry, can draw from, can use, can purchase. And it just provides one of those sources that a company is going to need when they decide to make some changes like this.
And you know that in the future there's going to be more of this, not less of this.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely the trend. I mean, plenty of technology.
And the technology is right there out on the street. You know, most of what we need in order to do this, we just buy off the street.
Really?
You know, well, like the webcasting service and all of that. I mean,
you're leveraging the technology that exists. I mean, you're using it for your own purposes.
Why spend a lot of money to build it and maintain it? The one thing we do have is our own LMS.
Learning Management System. That was a guess, but I thought it was a pretty good one.
Excellent.
KMC On Demand, Knowledge Management Center On Demand. Anyway, we do have that, and we've found that's been very advantageous. We had actually used a little before that came along. We actually were able to build a testing database in our Lotus Notes out there. You know, our email system, and that actually had worked pretty good. I just want to comment that you will find that there's little pieces you have to build internally, but most of the electronic systems you need, like I said, the webcasting systems, even that capture system I was talking about, we didn't build that. We bought that, you know, bought a license for it. It was very, very reasonable, and yet I can't even begin to tell you how much money we've saved on that. I'd have to go back and look at it, but it's probably a seven-figure number just on over the last 4 years that we have saved with our systems training.
Yeah, it's interesting because most companies are full of people who have just years of knowledge that they've accumulated, very, very valuable things that they know. But it's not recorded anywhere except within that person. Virtual training allows that SME or that person with the knowledge to put it in a more permanent type of format.
It's archived, and now it's curatable, and
absolutely
a lot, and the company can use it forever.
Absolutely, and, you know, today, I mean, there is a transition, you know, in business today between the old and the young.
Right.
And the older folks that may have this type of knowledge, it's just a wonderful way for them to leave a legacy and to share.
Right.
I gave a little bit of a plug earlier to the site organization, which tends to be it's all insurance oriented. And I know some of your listeners are not necessarily in the insurance industry. So one organization that pretty much any trainer can get involved in is ASTD, American Society of Training and Development.
And you guys are involved with ASTD?
Yeah, we have people that are involved with ASTD. Mm-hmm. I have been over the years, and we have found that when you get out there, like I say, and get involved with these organizations, you'll gain a tremendous amount of knowledge. And it goes back to what you commented on earlier. You make less mistakes if you ask those questions. Learn from other people's mistakes.
Right. And it seems like this industry is very collaborative. I mean, people aren't keeping this kind of to themselves. They're trying to get it out and help everybody.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So before we wrap, let's share some counsel with the learner. Both in general, the learner that's going to have an opportunity to participate in virtual learning, but also maybe within the Crawford systems, you know, what are some things that they ought to keep in mind as they prepare to get the most out of being a learner with a virtual learning format?
Be involved. Make sure that you keep up with the work. Like we said, we have pre-studies. We ask people to be prepared before they come in. If there is something that you've been asked to do before you come in, so that doesn't pull the whole class back, we have found that we've really had to enforce that and ask people to get any kind of a pre-study finished. If you're given an assignment at night, that's a self-study type thing. Get it done. Be involved and Yeah, for a lot of our I should, to their credit, a lot of our folks that were training at the basic level are fresh out of college. They're still in that learning mode. You know, they're used to doing homework at night or attending classes. So for them, it's kind of a natural thing. And it's been great working with them because they jump right on all this stuff.
Well, gentlemen, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio this morning. We got to have you back. There's going to be all kinds of new stuff to talk to. I want to talk maybe when we have you back about other platforms that you might be using to distribute this and some of these other organizations that you might be working with. That'd be a, you guys be up for that sometime? That'd be fun.
We'll be much older too. Then.
I have to go to lunch first, but I'll be back this afternoon.
Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest this morning, our producer, Kevin Finn, and, of course, our sponsor, Training Pros, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next week on Learning Insights. Although we style, got several.